Kane is in the building.
Graduation season is here, and it's time to look for jobs. So it's time to trade in those hoodies, t-shirts, and jerseys for button-down shirts in white, blue, checks, and stripes. That's right, it's time to step up your professional wardrobe and start dressing like the boss. Our friends at Liberty Shirt Co. have been making our favorite flannels, but they also make the finest dress shirts so you can look like the CEO. Every Liberty shirt is made in New Jersey, and if you use a promo code 3PEAT, you get 10% off your purchase. That's promo code 3PEAT for 10% off the purchase. Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast of season 3. I'm your host, Stephen Bonazzo, and I'm joined with
Josh Bromwitz.
And unfortunately today, one of our co-hosts, Alex Castle, won't be able to join us. But we got a special person taking his spot. I mentioned him many times in this podcast, and it's my own brother, Jackson Bonazzo. So Jackson, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on here.
Of course, of course. So, it's only one episode deal, so you know he's not staying. Unless if he kills it, and then maybe he'll get a spot. But he won't take Castle's spot. I promise you that. So we got a lot of good stuff to talk about today. NFL, their schedule release, so that's some big news. And then in the NBA, there's a team that clinched the playoffs for the first time in many years. And I know someone on this podcast is happy, and then someone back home is happy. So we'll get into that. And then last but not least, there were some rumblings in the NHL for a New York team, so we'll get into that later too. So let's start off with the NFL schedule being released on Wednesday. Obviously, it was kind of leaked before that, but they had a whole special on it. And I know my Bears got a lot of primetime games. I know they're banking on Justin Fields, the future, to plan those primetime games and carry the Bears to the playoffs and being our guy. And then promise your Jets don't really have any primetime games.
We got one Thursday game and a London game. Let's go.
Well, in London game's at 9:30 a.m., so enjoy that. And then, Jackson, your Giants and Castle's Giants, you got what, like two Monday night games?
Two Monday night games and a Thursday night game.
Okay, all right, so
three.
So my Bears are carrying it, but there's a lot of interesting games.
Start week one with the Jets. Revenge game right away.
Yeah, Panthers-Jets. Sam Darnold going against his former team, against Zach Wilson, who took his spot. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of hoping that would be a primetime game in itself.
I was hoping that would be at MetLife too, just because I think it would be nice for Sam Darnold to see the fans cheering him and Robbie Anderson on, because they wouldn't get booed at MetLife. All Jet fans know that Gase ruined him. That's not on him. Jet fans will always respect him for what he tried showing, because he had flashes of talent. And I'm scared that he's going to kill us and throw for 300 plus yards against our defense. But I have confidence in a Robert Sala defense now. So,
and that's Darnold's opening game. Watch. And that's Darnold's opening game in Carolina. So he's got a lot to prove to the Carolina
fans. And it's Zach Wilson's debut. Assuming he's the starter.
And then we'll keep on the Jets. And then Zach Wilson versus Trevor Lawrence, was it week 16?
Yeah. Battle, so first and second overall picks. That'll be a fun one. People were saying that Zach Wilson, as the draft got closer, he really closed the gap between the other quarterbacks. It was only right behind Trevor Lawrence, but it was close. So we'll see how close that gap really is when they play each other. Trevor Lawrence, I think, is a stud, and he's going to have an amazing career. But look at Joe Burrow last year. He'll only go as far as that offensive line is able to protect him. His receivers are able to catch the balls. So if he has no protection, then I don't know how his year will look, if he'll make an entire 17-game schedule now.
And then moving to the other side of New York for the Giants, Big Blue. So, yeah, Thursday night was against Washington, right? Funny, yeah, well, I mean, Danny Dimes, a lot of success in Washington, so.
Danny Dimes, Saquon, Joe Judge, the whole Giants organization just owns Washington lately.
And then you guys have two Monday night games, but they just tried killing the Giants. Was it?
Yeah, thanks, NFL. I mean, at Kansas City and at Tampa Bay, Monday Night Football primetime. What? Wow, dude, what did we do to deserve that one? I mean, they're just asking for us to get shredded on national TV, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'll be honest, though. It'll be a good test for your defense because everyone's been talking about the Giants secondary, if it's really top five. And look, that's a great test to see if you guys are playoff ready because that comes in what, the middle of the season?
Yeah, so Tampa Bay is week 8, I believe. So right in that halfway point, and Kansas City is, I want to say, week 11, right after the bye week. So we'll have a little extra preparation, a little rest for some guys to get healthy, you know, and take down Pat Mahomes. So I think we'll lose to Tampa, but I'm gonna predict a Giants victory in Kansas City right now. You heard it here first.
Really, I'm a little surprised by that because the Giants actually played really well against Tampa last year Monday night at MetLife. But I mean, I guess anything can happen. But I guess to go into Arrowhead and I feel like it's gonna be full capacity. So that's a little ballsy of you.
Oh, it's gonna be a big statement. Big statement. Brady, he'll get it against us, but Pat Mahomes, Pat Graham is going to keep him confused all game. And secondary is going to be super versatile and super super hungry. I'm feeling a win on that one, but we'll see what happens.
See, I mean, I'm not a Giants fan, but I would think it would be the opposite. And I think, Steve, you're kind of about to get to that too. I think the way you guys played the Bucs last year and now you added more pieces, you have a healthy Saquon, I think you guys stand a better chance against the Buccaneers because, yeah, they won the Super Bowl last year, but look what they did in the regular season. Tom Brady in the regular season does not compare to playoff Tom Brady. So Tom Brady could have an off game, and he's like, whatever, it's a regular season game. He doesn't turn it on until the playoffs. Whereas Pat Mahomes, we've seen what he does in the playoffs and the regular season. I would think if the Giants were to win one of those two, it'd be against the Bucs and not the Chiefs.
You see, I see where you're coming from with that, but I'm going to say that I think the Buccaneers' defense is far and away better than Kansas City's. And I think they're going to give our offensive line with that pass rush and those linebackers a lot more problems than maybe KC's front seven will. And I think that the Giants' offense, hopefully, can expose the Chiefs' defense a little bit more than Tampa Bay. And I think if our defense is as solid as we think it is, it'll hold up well against both those teams. So if our defense holds up well against both, the offense maybe plays a little bit better against Kansas City, I think that's a game we maybe squeak out. And I think people like you guys are giving us more of a chance against Tampa Bay. So I think we're going to shock the world a little bit, and we're going to take out Kansas City on national TV. I think you heard it here first. That's a prediction.
We'll both take on the 3-Beat podcast, and not probably one of our own, but Jackson Donzo. So, hey, Jackson, if it happens, then we might be calling you back on to congratulate you, you know, and congratulate the Giants.
Absolutely. You know, I'll be the oracle from that point forward. Just predict everything. I'll be your go-to.
How about Justin Fields' first 4,000-yard passer in Bears history? Can you predict that?
Well, he's got an extra game to do it, so you better hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
You guys would really be sorry.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, maybe next year, or actually 2 years from now. Next year he can – tone it down. You guys got a little down year. We'll take your nice pick. And then you guys could have a lot of success. Go for it. Be my guest.
Fair enough. And I want to go back to Brady because obviously the Buccaneers, reigning Super Bowl champs, I mean, they're just loaded with primetime games. So did the week one, you know, that Thursday night game to start off the season, probably the Bucs will get the little, you know, Super Bowl, not parade, but their, you know, ceremony before the game, you know, maybe a little unveil the banner for Super Bowl 51, or is it 51? Or what is it now, 55? 51, I don't know why I'm going to 51, but Super Bowl 55 champs. This is against Dallas. I mean, did anyone see Dallas being in that first game? I didn't see it. How about you?
I mean, we all hate it, but they're America's team. Like, I understand why. Dallas's market is huge. They'll draw in ratings. It's Dak Prescott's first game, but I would have rather seen someone like Buffalo or anyone else in that first game.
I would have liked to see the Patriots. Tom Brady, week one coming out the gates. I thought that would be a huge storyline.
That's going to be middle of this. Like,
yeah, I know, but I think that would have been
drawing ratings later. It does, like, because that'll peak the ratings if it was.
Well, actually, they're actually away in New England, so yeah, that wouldn't make sense. But I wish that they could have done that game. But I guess yeah, Dallas, that's a huge market. It's America's team. They're going to draw a lot of viewership in on that game. So I mean, it makes sense as to why they did it. Looking at the rest of the schedule, there's nobody that really jumps out at me. I guess like you said, Buffalo would be probably the only other game that would be exciting.
So I guess it'll be interesting. Like Promise, you said Dak's first game back from a scary ankle injury against Jackson's own and Castle's own Giants. But then you guys talked about the Patriots game. I'm pretty excited. I mean, this will be the first time ever that Tom Brady will face a Patriots, because obviously last year was his first year in Tampa Bay and they didn't play New England. And then not only is he playing New England for the first time, but it's in New England, in Foxborough, where he called home for over 20 years, won 6 world championships with them. And it's a Sunday night game, which he had many Sunday night games and many remarkable Sunday night football performances with New England in New England. So I'm hyped for that game. I mean, we know New England kind of sucked last year, but they made some additions. But now my question is, well, first of all, you guys looking forward to that game? I'm sure you guys are.
All right, my bold prediction is that's going to be Mac Jones' first start. I think Cam Newton will start the first 3 games, and he'll be below average, and Mac Jones will get the start against Brady. But I think the Bucs will beat down on the Patriots. This will be Brady's revenge game, because I guess that's what everyone's calling them now.
Yeah, I think it's easy to script this as Brady's revenge game, and I think that's definitely a likely outcome. But I think, you know, we're sleeping on Bill Belichick and the Patriots because, you know, he doesn't say much. He's a quiet guy. But I have to imagine all this Brady, stuff here, all the rumors about how there was trouble and, you know, friction between them or whatever, and how Brady's doing so much better without him. I think Bill Belichick low-key wants to kind of prove everybody wrong and say, you know, it was Belichick, not Brady, that won all those Super Bowls. So we'll see. I also thought it's going to be interesting because Brady – is about 1,100 yards behind Drew Brees for the NFL's all-time passing yard list in a career. And he averaged last year about 290 yards per game. And if you were to continue that trend this year, he actually would break the record week 4 in New England. So I think that's an interesting storyline to watch. If he were to continue his average from last year, about 280, 290 a game, he'd become the NFL all-time leading passing yardage guy in New England. In front of all the Pats fans and Belichick. So that'd be awesome.
Except you're forgetting he plays Dallas week 1 and we saw their defense. So he could already throw for 500.
Well, week 2, he might break it.
Well, that would be something though. That would be definitely something special if he does that. And I'm obviously Patriots fans are not going to boo Brady when he comes in. It's not going to be like one of those guys that leaves out of nowhere and teams hate him. I mean, if he gets any sort of booze, and that's just piss poor on New England's part and the fans. But I think Brady, though, not that he's out for revenge, but I think he's going to try to hang 40 on them. He's not going to be like, well, I'll let them. I mean, obviously, no one's going to let anyone win, but like, I think he's definitely going to try and go out there and perform because it's a big game for him, whether he says it or not. But I know he's looking forward to that game just playing New England for the first time ever. I mean, you don't want to go 0-1 against New England. And plus, who knows how many more times he'll play New England in his career, because we don't know how much longer he'll play, even though it says he can play till he's 50. So I think he's definitely want to go, you know, he's going to try to go out there and perform at a high level and have a little something on Belichick if he beats him. Because if not, you know, there's going to be chirping a little bit. So I know that's definitely one of the top games I'm looking forward to this year. And then I guess we'll wrap the NFL schedule up with my Bears, you know, the Bears. 5 primetime games. I can't complain. I mean, week 1 against L.A., the Rams on Sunday night. That one's going to be interesting because a lot of people are already calling for Justin Fields to start week 1. Who knows if that will happen? As of now, it looks like Andy Dalton. So now the question is, do you throw Justin Fields primetime against the Rams Sunday night in LA for your first ever game? I don't know. Here's the thing. If he does well, then you're like, holy, you know, this is looking pretty good. If he doesn't, you really can't blame or judge because that's a tough task. So I want to get your guys' opinions from a non-Bears fan. I mean, I know, Jackson, you like Ohio State, so you like Fields, but obviously, like, you're going to be, you know, true with this. You think Fields should start week one in L.A., or you think Andy Dalton should get it? I mean, last year when the Bears played L.A. Rams on Monday night with Nick Foles, we scored one touchdown, and it was a defensive touchdown from Eddie Jackson. So we really only scored a field goal. So do we pretty much put that same product again on the field, or do you give Justin Fields a chance and hope that he can move the ball and score some points?
I think as much as Bears fans want to see Justin Fields from week one immediately on, I don't think that's the right decision. I think, you know, you have to protect your rookie quarterback, right? And so do you want his first ever NFL game to be in Los Angeles going against Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, all this stuff? You know, he's never seen an NFL defense outside of, you know, the Bears during practice, different schemes and the flow of the game, the speed of the game. It's a lot different. You know, practice and training camp is different from the regular season. And I think what the Bears need to do is, even though Justin Fields, we believe, is clearly more talented than Mitch Trubisky ever was, I don't think, you know, you can make the same mistake. You know, they rushed in Trubisky a little bit, maybe, because that awful Mike Glennon signing. And, you know, it just didn't work out in the end. I think you need to protect him, let him learn, let him get a feel for the game and how the NFL goes before you just throw him into the fire against two of the best defensive players in the entire league on the road, prime time. That is just not an environment that's going to, you know, breed success for anybody, let alone a rookie quarterback with a lot of pressure on him now, because he's supposed to be the Bears' savior. And if you get him out of the gate, you know, he has a bad game, his confidence goes down, whatever. It's just not a good look. It's the same thing they did with Mitch, and I think you need to, you know, be smarter this time around.
And but then to that point, I mean, I don't disagree. That's a great point. And I think definitely for week one, I mean, honestly, I'd love to see Fields out there, but I think it would be safer to put play Andy Dalton. But I did see out of like over 6,000 NFL players who like did this mental test, Justin Fields placed number one with a score of like 130. And Mahomes, who obviously everyone, Mahomes, he placed at 110. So Justin Fields, his mental game, like, you know, he understands this game. He's got high football IQ, and that's what Mitch was struggled with. Mitch really, I don't think, really truly understood the game. And I mean, even Mahomes, you know, came out on the shop, on the shop episodes with LeBron, saying he really truly didn't understand some of the defensive schemes and coverages until just like his second year in the NFL. So it will be interesting. But then the Bears got a lot of primetime games later in the season. So from it, so you think the NFL is banking on the Bears making that midway, halfway point season switching to Justin Fields from Andy Dalton? And that's why they did all the primetime games then?
I think the Bears are going to start with Andy Dalton, give him like four-ish games, just a rough estimate, and then it'll be the Justin Fields show. And I like what Jackson was saying. Fields brings a very versatile, athletic play style to the quarterback position that Mitch lacked, Mike Glennon, Nick Foles, any of the past Bears quarterbacks. And he's must-see TV, similar to Mahomes and those type of quarterbacks. So it makes sense why the Bears have this many primetime games. And yeah, the Bears are a talented team. For years, their defense has carried their struggling offense, and that's why they've gotten first-round exits. But who knows? This could be a different year, especially with the drama going on in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams' uncertainty. Who knows? This could be the year of the Chicago Bears, and I know you're jumping for joy when I say that.
I love that. I wish you could just say that on repeat. I should have recorded that. Well, yeah, no, it was – it's funny how the NFL, like, saved all the – I mean, we – like, it's funny because I feel like if the Bears didn't draft Justin Fields, we would have maybe, like, two primetime games, one against Green Bay, maybe the L.A. game, and maybe one – like, but because we drafted Justin Fields, now we got, like, a primetime game against the Steelers on Monday night, which I think I'm looking forward to. That would be a pretty good game. And then you got the Vikings again on Monday night, then the Packers Sunday night. We play on Thanksgiving again. So, there's a lot of – I will be able to watch the Bears quite a bit. And then, you know, the Bears play the Giants. They play some local teams that I can watch. So, I'm definitely going to get my fair share of Bears games this year, which I'm ecstatic about. And then it's funny because I don't even know how many primetime games Green Bay has. I know they had the one Sunday night against the Bears, but I didn't see really too many other like games that they had. I don't know if you guys saw any, but it's probably because the thing with Aaron Rodgers, like if Aaron Rodgers really doesn't come back and it's either Jordan Love or Blake Bortles playing, no one's going to want to watch that. So it's funny. It's funny how just one player,
they have five also.
Oh, they do have five. All right. Well, you know, I mean, it makes sense.
They're banking on Rodgers to play, but if those are end of the season games, those could easily be flexed. So,
and that's a big thing to flex, you know, if you start seeing some teams like, you know, like
maybe could be flexed in. I know the Giants got some big games. They have the Eagles at the end of the season twice. I know Giant fans are mad that they didn't get that week one, but an end of the season primetime game against Philly and MetLife could be fun for a lot of people.
It'll be worth the wait. Absolutely. We'll let that just keep on festering, all that hatred and bad blood. And, you know, when Philly makes a trip into MetLife, they're going to wish they didn't. That's all I'm going to say. You know what I mean? But yeah, so we'll see what happens. Maybe the Giants will get flexed in. Maybe some other teams will be a surprise team, you know, or a surprise playoff race, and those games will get flexed in or out. I'm hoping that, because I know the prominent Aaron Rodgers rumor is Denver, right? That's his rumored destination that he prefers, and that's who the Giants open up with week one. I'm hoping that's not like a, you know, subliminal thing from the NFL saying, oh, there's a imminent Aaron Rodgers trade to Denver, and you know, he's going to open up against a New York market week one. That would be just the worst possible scenario for the Giants. But if it's not Aaron Rodgers, I like our chances. If they get Aaron Rodgers, we're in trouble. But, well, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. So that's, you know, a lot of NFL schedules. So now it's pretty much we got to just wait in, you know, the first 18-game season, regular season. So that'll be definitely a lot of football to watch, a lot of good football, a lot of big games. So we'll definitely have to tune in. I'm looking forward to this football season. It seems to be very exciting. But another thing that's exciting right now is the NBA. The playoffs are near. Teams are starting to clinch. The playing games are, you know, those teams that are on the bubble to be playing in and playing tournament. There's a lot of competition right now. And I mentioned on the top of the show, there's a team that just clinched the other night in Jackson, in Apsley Castle. You guys probably know who that team is, right? Why don't you just share with the fans who that team is?
I think I have an idea of who that is. Nah, that would be the New York Knicks. Clinched their first playoff berth since 2013. Man, what a long and painful 8-year stretch that was. You know, and I guess it could be worse. There, you could be a fan of like the Pistons or somebody who just is traditionally worse than the Knicks are. But there was something about that Knicks run where for 8 years there where it was just – it was painful. It was painful to be a Knicks fan. You know, you were throwing guys out there that are just don't belong in the NBA, and guys that are not in the league anymore, guys I've never heard of. And, you know, but the true fans, you know, stick through it all. New York will always be a Knicks town. It'll never be a Nets fandom. But you know what? It's exciting, man, to clinch the playoffs and have a shot at home court advantage. If you told me that at the beginning of the season, I would tell you, you know, hey, that's super optimistic, but that's just stupid. There's no way, right? And if I think if we had even clinched, you know, the 10 seed and squeaked into the play-in tournament, that would have been a huge success. But Tom Thibodeau and these boys have been just surprising everybody all year long. They've been putting in the work. The rookies are stepping up. Julius Randle's transformed himself. I mean, what an exciting time to be a Knicks fan. I mean, it's really – They've exceeded expectations so far, and I think they have a legitimate chance to win a playoff series. So we'll see what happens with the seeding, where we land. But to avoid a playing game and clinch the playoffs, I mean, that's spectacular, honestly.
I think you were spot on with everything except the part about the Nets and Knicks about New York, but that's a different topic. But a lot of people being shocked about Thibodeau and how he has the Knicks playing really shouldn't shock basketball fans, because wherever he goes, he breeds success. Chicago, Minnesota, New York, immediate playoff runs. So I'm not, I want to say I'm shocked, but I'm not shocked because it's a Thibodeau run team. But Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, Quickly, Rose, wow. They're playing amazing right now. Randle could be most improved player. People are saying he should be in the run in the conversation at least for MVP, even though he's outside the top five, but he deserves to be in the conversations. Derrick Rose, what a story that's been like throughout his entire career. Quickly doesn't get enough respect from where he was drafted in the draft. He's the best rookie on the Knicks, and he was their second one taken. Sorry, Obi Toppin. I had high praise for you. That's a New York kid. That's a Westchester kid.
Poor Obi. And Thibodeau had success with USA Basketball. I can't forget about that.
Exactly. No, but, I mean, right now, as of last night's games, it was a little not in the Knicks' favor because they dropped to the sixth seed, which means they play Milwaukee first round, and you want to have home court advantage. But still, even to be in the playoffs is exciting. And with this young Knicks team, it won't be their last. So it's a bright future for the Knicks fans, and the dark days are hopefully behind them.
And I think the thing with the Knicks, if they want to have success in this playoffs, is they have to remain energetic, calm, and poised on that big stage. They can't let the playoffs and that big stage get to them and they show their lack of playoff experience. I mean, it's going to happen regardless in some way, shape, or form, but they can't let it get to them. I mean, all season they've been competing with the Lakers, the Bucks, some of these top teams, the Nets. So you can't just now, because it's a playoffs, go back to, oh, we never been here, and now we're just going to suck and get swept. And I don't think Thibodeau will have that, you know, let that mindset get inside them and impact them. But, you know, RJ Barrett needs to be playing with the confidence that he's been playing with. Julius Randle needs to be leading this team like he's been leading them all year. Quickly's got to be stepping up and making big plays for rookie like he's been doing all year. So if the Knicks can continue doing this, and guys like Bullock and Burks, if they play that key role that they have been playing, then the Knicks will do just fine. I'm not saying that they're going to be making a finals appearance or hosting the NBA trophy at the end of the year, but they may be, depending on their seeding and who they play, they may be able to squeak out a series and move to the next round. I mean, even with Melo, they weren't able to get too far. So, but this is a different team. And I think, I forgot who I was talking about with this. I think this Knicks team is better off than the Melo-led team. Because the Melo-led team, Melo was a star. He was an icon. It was, you know, pretty much Melo, Melo, Melo. Obviously, Randle is this, like, face of that team. But not really at the same time. Because just a year ago, Knicks fans, I'm sure Jackson yourself, were pretty much saying, I don't know if we really want this guy in the future. Now that's changed, but you don't really have one big star. You just have a bunch of guys that are playing well together, that have good chemistry, and it's not just like, let's force a ball to this guy. It's whoever's open, whoever thinks has the best shot, take, and that's what the Knicks are doing. I think that's why they're having more success and could have more success than in years past, and even that team led by Melo. I mean, Jackson, now you're the Knicks fan, so do you think that's a good point or no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in 2012, 2013 with Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire and Tyson Chandler, it was iso ball. It was Melo was going to score 60 a game. Tyson Chandler was going to lock down the paint, and, you know, Amari would fill in the rest, and they would just win off just Melo scoring. And it was not as team friendly. You know what I mean? It was definitely more go through Melo, both ends of the floor, and whatever happens, happens. And, you know, this team is extremely different. Like you said, the thing is this Knicks team is built on, you know, resurgence, you know, resurgence from Julius Randle to transform from a guy that, like you said, I would have traded Randle for a bag of balls at this time last year to anything to get him off the team. I'm not alone. It was plenty of Knicks fans that hated him, but it's really, he was on our nerves. He was ready to go. You know, but now he transformed into, like we said, most improved player and a legitimate case for MVP. You know, Derrick Rose career, he's returning to, you know, I don't want to say his MVP form, but I mean, he's playing way better than he should be for, you know, where he is right now. And it's a huge reason as to why we're there. And the Knicks, you know, two of our, the worst parts of the Knicks teams in the past few years have been 3-point shooting and defense. And now this season's been built on those two things. The Knicks are the fourth best three-point shooting team off by percentage in the NBA right now. And they're top three statistical defense in terms of defensive efficiency and points per game. They've been top five all year long. And so now to take the two biggest weaknesses and turn them into your two biggest strengths over the course of one season is incredible. And I think, you know, these veteran guys like Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson and Julius Randle to an extent and Tom Thibodeau, they're going to really keep these guys in check. You know, they're not going to let the moment get too big, like we said in the playoffs. They're going to keep everybody where they need to be, play the way they play, keep up the intensity and how they've been playing all year, and just keep that consistency. Like we said, you know, if we there's still a path to the 4 seed and a home court advantage. There's a path to the 5 seed and the 6 seed. You know, if we can get a home court advantage in a series against, say, a team like Atlanta, you know, I don't see why you know, we can't advance, win a playoff series. You know, Miami scares me a little bit more. They're one of the hotter teams in the league right now. So that would be a tough draw. But even Milwaukee, you know, I'm not scared of Milwaukee. We're, you know, the Knicks not ducking anybody, man. Who we're playing is who we're playing. And they're just a gritty team with that kind of mentality. They're going to go out and play hard the way they've been playing all season long. And I think with that defense, that intensity and the discipline, I think, you know, they're going to be a pain to play. You know, teams are not going to want to play the Knicks for, you know, potentially a 7-game series. They're going to wear them down and have a shot, you know, and that just making the playoffs, like we said, itself is, it's a huge win. But if we can get a playoff series, I mean, we're talking about seriously turning the franchise around.
And I mean, it'll definitely be interesting to see. And from side, I didn't mean to cut you off if you had a point, but I do want to go to you next because, and I want to talk both sides. The 1 and 2 seeds are very interesting now. Very interesting. I thought a couple of days ago,
Philly is about to clinch the 1 seed. It's really the 2 and the 3 that there's a race for.
Okay. Okay. So,
because Brooklyn controls its own destiny to the 2 seed right now.
So do you think Brooklyn can hold it and clinch a 2 seed?
Well, let's just say that scary hours are back this weekend with now Harden returning this past week. Kyrie, of course, got hurt again, but it's nothing serious. KD's back. He's been putting up monster numbers like usual. So with the three of them playing again, the Nets play the Spurs, your Bulls and the Cavs on Saturday, Sunday. Sorry, Stevie. It's not going to be fun for your boys playing in Brooklyn, but we're getting ready for the playoffs, so it's going to be fun. The Nets holding the 2 seed, going to play the winner of a play-in game. I am scared if it's Charlotte, because they're a fun team with a lot of energy. They like to play full court, and the Nets have some older legs, like Blake Griffin. They're not what they used to be. So a young team like that does scare me. But I'm excited for playoffs. And this is what Nets fans have been waiting for a long time.
And then the key to the Nets is they have the experience. I mean, they have KD who won the finals. They had Harden and Kyrie. Kyrie won the finals too in Cleveland. And then you have Harden who has made he's made the Western Conference finals.
Yeah, he's never been able to get past that hump, though. He's never gone past the Western Conference finals. KD, though, finals MVP. Kyrie's been in the finals with the big shot against the Warriors. Blake hasn't been in the finals, but he's made deep runs with the Clippers, with Chris Paul.
DeAndre Jordan.
Same thing. That's if he plays.
True. Well, but that's the main thing the Nets is. They have a talent.
Joe Harris has a ring. Can't forget my guy Joe Harris.
Joe Harris, yeah. White boy who can shoot.
Best shooter in the NBA right now. Better stats than Curry.
Yeah, well, see if he can do it to the playoffs. But the main thing the Nets is, you know, is health. If they can't stay healthy during the playoffs, I'm not going to lie, from it, they're not going to go anywhere.
I agree. I mean, I did see a report. I don't know how true it is that we might also be getting Dinwiddie back for the playoffs. Forgot about him. Yeah, the guy who tore his ACL, like the second or third game in. Supposed to miss the entire year, but they said it was a partial ACL tear that they're not ruling him out for the playoffs. I don't know if that's smart, though. I think the Nets should just let him rest because we have a deep team already. We don't need to be taking minutes away from guys who have been stepping up all season long. I think that would just ruin the chemistry even more, because the big three has only played together for 7 games as is. And now heading into the playoffs, you added Dinwiddie to the mix off the bench. That'll take minutes away from guys like Bruce Brown, Landry Shamet, who have been stepping up all season long. So I love that he wants to be there, but I think he should just stay on the bench and just like support his guys. But man, playoffs are here.
So I think the big key to the Nets playoff success is health, obviously, right? But also what concerns me is that chemistry issue. Like you said, the big three has played 7 games together this season, right? And now you want to throw Dinwiddie back into the mix further, like we said, take minutes away from guys and further just, you know, cloud up that team chemistry. I mean, you know, these are teams that have had guys and units that have played together cohesively all season long. And we haven't seen the big three play consistently together. We don't know exactly how they play together or what, you know, how successful they really could be. And, you know, who's going to be the primary ball handler, who's going to facilitate, who's going to be this, that, the other. It's tough to mess with a lot of that chemistry, that limited chemistry that you guys do have going on. Cause I don't know how many different starting lineups the Nets have used this season, but it's crazy. So to me, when you're getting into the thick of that playoff, you know, you get into the Eastern Conference Finals and you're playing a team that's red hot and they've had the same lineup all year. That's a tough thing to overcome. Chemistry is huge. And I do also want to say James Harden did make the finals 2012 against the Heat when he was with the Thunder. But
that's right. So, I forgot about that.
Had to point that out.
But and that was when he was with Kevin Durant.
With Kevin Durant, right. So we'll see. We'll see what Kyrie does. And how they all mesh, the three of them. It's going to be interesting. It's gonna make or break the Nets.
I think the chemistry issue is what the common thing everyone brings up. But at least between the big three, they've established that Harden is the primary ball handler because he wants to be that guy facilitating. He doesn't care if he scores 0 points, but he wants to rack up those assists and get guys like Durant, Irving, Joe Harris, a DeAndre Jordan lob. That's what he wants to see, and that's what his goal is for this Nets team, to be that leader as the point guard. Kyrie wants the ball in his hands to be the scorer, but he knows that KD is the guy. As everyone knows that when healthy, KD is a top three talent, and Kyrie with his scoring ability getting to the hoop is just insane. So between that, I don't think chemistry will be that much of an issue. And it's been better as of late, but I worry about the defense because the Nets really don't have one guy who is a defensive anchor. And every team in the playoffs has that guy. The Knicks, you said they're a top 5 defensive team already. Their efficiency with Thibodeau coaching is remarkable. The Bucks have Giannis, Drew Holiday. Any of those guys could lock someone up on the perimeter. Philly, Ben Simmons might win Defensive Player of the Year. Embiid is a lockdown in the post. So the Nets don't really have that. So that is my big worry, not really the chemistry aspect.
And then also, not that when you have all those guys, you need coaching, but this is Steve Nash's first playoff appearance as a coach. I mean, obviously, he's played many times in playoffs as a player, but as a coach, this is a little different. He's got to make adjustments during the game for playoffs and not the regular season, or not, you know, making those adjustments as a player on the court. So there's a lot that goes into it. But I want to talk about the Western Conference, because the Western Conference is always brutal, always tough. And beginning of the season, we probably figured that the Lakers would have the number one seed locked up. And no, that's not the case. You got the Jazz sitting at the number one seed, 15-20, only a game up against no other than Steve Nash's former team, the Phoenix Suns. I mean, who would have thought that would be the one, too?
Baby. The Chris Paul effect. I'm so happy that the Suns are top three in the West and will hold that. And I'm even more happy to see LeBron and the Lakers basically about to be in a playing game if they keep dropping. Wow. No, I'm happy for Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, because they are balling. No one really talks about them until Chris Paul came to Phoenix. And the Jazz, I don't think anyone predicted them to be a one seed and clinch the one seed. Did they clinch or not yet?
I don't think so. I mean, they're only game up, so I don't think. And, you know, I know they still had quite a few games to play, so not yet.
There's still two games this weekend, so yeah. Wow. Either or. I don't think anyone would have predicted either the Suns or the Jazz to be a one or two in the West, especially with the Clippers, the Nuggets last year, the Lakers. And still the Nuggets. I don't think anyone's really talking about them because everyone assumed that they dropped so far because Jamal Murray tore his ACL. But they've won ever since Aaron Gordon came to the team. They're still putting up points. Jokic proving why he should be MVP this year. He's leading this team on both ends of the floor and taking on the role of being a point center.
And I got 2 points I want to make. Two pretty big points. First off, the Jazz are going to be scary in the playoffs. This is not their first time being in the playoffs. And Donovan Mitchell, that man leads the Jazz pretty far into the playoffs. I mean, his rookie year, he beat the Thunder, who had Westbrook and PG, right? Am I right or no? And then, so they got a lot of experience. Well, like a team like the Suns, CP3 has a lot of experience, but Devin Booker doesn't. DeAndre Ayton doesn't. But I still think the Suns will be able to do just fine because they're very talented. And then the second, the Lakers to me are nothing without LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And you see it when LeBron and AD play and they're healthy. They're a top team, not only in the West, but in the NBA. But when they don't play, they fall from being a top team in the West to now being on the verge of being in the playing game. And what can you blame? I mean, oh, because we don't have LeBron and AD. Okay, then. But if you guys are a good team, I mean, it's hard to, yes, replace a guy like LeBron or AD. I mean, LeBron is one of the best players, or if not, could be argued the best player ever in NBA history. And then a guy like Anthony Davis is a top player in the league right now. So, yes, it's tough to replace guys like that. But if you're a good team, you should be able to find ways to win without them. And they just haven't been able to do that. So, I mean, I'll give the Nets a credit. When your big guys have gone out, you still have found ways to win. But the Lakers have not. And I know the West is brutal. So I want to get your guys' opinion. So if LeBron, I mean, clearly LeBron has been sitting out. And I know playoff LeBron is a different beast. But if he's not healthy or if he misses time, do you see the Lakers going far and repeating or no?
No shot. I think you put it best. There's guys that got to step up. And I think that's the perfect time for the playoffs. And it's great that the Nets guys have been stepping up all season. But it doesn't matter if they can in the playoffs. But I'm not worried about that. The Lakers, they have good guys on their team. They traded for Andre Drummond. They signed Montrezl Harrell, Dennis Schroeder. Those are good guys. People like to give shit to Kyle Kuzma, but he puts up points. He's a little inconsistent at times, but he puts up points when he needs to. But other than that, they have very little bench production. Sometimes they have Talen Horton-Tucker, Alex Caruso stepping up. But other than that, no one steps up from them. So that's going to be a huge red flag for Laker fans. They get no bench production. But look at teams like the Clippers, the Blazers. Those teams are going to be scary in the playoffs that no one wants to face. Damian Lillard's on a ridiculous path right now. And who else did I say? I said the Blazers. And who was the other team that I just said?
You said the Clippers.
The Clippers, yeah. Look at how they got bounced out last year. Everyone was saying Pandemic P, myself included. We talked about him on the podcast saying Paul George is trash in the playoffs. Well, this is a perfect time for him to avenge that. Playoffs are here. Like, he's playing at a good pace right now with Kawhi Leonard missing a lot of games. So who knows? The Clippers could be a team that people don't want to face. And also, I believe if the Lakers end up being in the play-in game, they'd be playing the Warriors' first game. I think that's an automatic loss for the Lakers without LeBron. Steph Curry is ridiculous right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a ballsy take by you, but, I mean, Curry is unbelievable. Jackson, I want to get your opinion on this.
Yeah, so I'd have to agree with what Fromwitz just said. I think if the Lakers run into the Warriors in that playing game, it could potentially be an issue for them. I think, you know, if LeBron plays and AD plays, that's a game that the Lakers should win. But to Fromwitz's point, Steph Curry's been one of the hottest players in the league over the past month or so, maybe even 2 months. And if he gets hot and he wants to decide to drop 50 points and the Lakers can't keep up, that's a game they can lose easily, just as easily as they can win. And now you're looking at, oh crap, we just lost a playing game. Now we've got to play another playing game just to get into the playoffs, and you know, panic maybe sets in there. But I think if LeBron is healthy and AD is healthy and they're playing, I don't see why they can't. You know, I'm not going to say they're going to repeat, but you know, make a run in the playoffs. I mean, they've been there before. They're experienced. LeBron is probably the most experienced in the league at this point in the playoffs. I know they play. I believe they play the Blazers on Sunday, and that's going to decide play-in versus playoffs. Blazers are half game up right now. If the Lakers win that game, they'll be the sixth seed, and they'll end up getting the Clippers, I believe, in the first round. I think the Lakers can beat the Clippers. I do. And, you know, once you win a playoff series, you get your confidence back, get your guys back. You know, they've got two of the best players in the league on their team. I don't see why they can't win, but I could just as easily see, you know, them getting eliminated or losing a playing game, like I said, if it falls to the Warriors. So we'll see what happens Sunday when they play the Blazers. That you know, Damian Lillard is talking about how that's biggest game of the season. It's going to determine, like we said, play-in tournament or playoffs. So you know the Lakers are going to be hungry. You know the Blazers are going to be hungry. It's going to be great basketball. And the playoffs in the West are going to be really interesting this season. So we'll see.
I think the Lakers will only go as far as LeBron's like ability to play will take them. I mean, LeBron usually in the playoffs does not come out of the game, but coming off a high sprain, you know, a high ankle sprain, you can only play him so much. I mean, one, he's not as young as he used to, but I mean, anyone coming off a high ankle sprain, you got to be careful with. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on LeBron, not so much that like he needs to win, but like a lot of pressure on his body. And it's going to be interesting to see because, listen, at the end of the day, I mean, we're all human regardless if we're pro athletes or not. And some things you just can't rush no matter how much treatment or whatever you're getting, training. So it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, I want to watch LeBron, you know, do well in the playoffs and just be able to watch him in the playoffs. But at the end of the day, too, he knew this was not just a minor injury. This was pretty – it sidelined him for a lot of time. And even now when he came back, he played like one game and it seemed like he's now been resting for what? A couple games after that now, consecutive games. So it's clearly a pretty serious, you know, issue. I'm not saying obviously, it's, you know, not something that's keeping me out for the rest of the season, but I've tweaked my ankle and I could barely come back. So I can only imagine LeBron, he seemed promised. You got something to say?
Yeah, no. He said he may never be 100% again after this high ankle sprain. So that's definitely a huge concern for LeBron and how far this Lakers team will go. Because I agree with you, the Lakers will only go as far as LeBron will take them. And if LeBron's not on the court, then they're a mediocre team.
Yeah, that's it. And I thought you were gonna chirp me for, you know, my ankle, you know, when my buddy Jeff crossed me off. So
yeah, that's it. I'll say that for another time.
Yeah. So I thought you were gonna chirp me for that, but no, you agree with me. So I appreciate that. So the NBA, it's the season's pretty much coming to an end, and then it's only beginning. So I know the NBA playoffs, we missed it during this time last year with the pandemic, but the playoffs are back on time, and I think this playoffs are gonna be more exciting than ever. So definitely looking forward to it, and we'll just have to see who is hosting the trophy in what, June, right? Seems about right. So late June, maybe July. I don't know. I think June probably. And then last but not least, you know, we haven't talked hockey in a while, so I figured add it to the list, right? Talk some hockey, and there's a lot of big news, especially with one team. And actually today, the honor of two Rangers fans, Fromitz and then Jackson, two Rangers fans, and a lot of news of the Rangers, especially with that game with the Capitals and that son of a bitch, Tom Wilson, you know? And I think the events that I'll let you guys obviously talk more about it and dive more into it, but the events that happened after what was said about it and what wasn't done, and I think it was just a shame for the Rangers, and I think it wasn't necessarily the right moves. And obviously the NHL didn't make the right decisions, and I think really this situation turned into a shit show. And I mean, I'm sure both of you have a lot to say, so whoever wants to get off their chest first, yeah, take the stage.
You said it perfectly. That son of a bitch, Tom Wilson, he is the most hated man in all of hockey right now, because this is not like it's a first-time thing where he's proven he's a dirty player. No, he's done it to the Bruins. He's done it to numerous other teams. Late hits, when a man is down, shoving their face into the ice, punching the back of their head is just dangerous in any sport. Yes, hockey is a contact sport. Yes, there's fighting, but that's still dirty and illegal no matter what. And to be for there to be no suspension after he's been suspended for many games before, to only get a $5,000 fine is laughable. That's just basically a parking ticket, just a very expensive parking ticket, essentially. It's ridiculous to me. And then the Rangers released a statement saying that they don't agree with the actions taken by the NHL, that the league safety officer needs to be removed, basically, which is, I think, the right thing to do, because multiple Rangers were injured from this, didn't play the rest of the season, and you still got to care about the player's health and safety first, and the league didn't. The Rangers ended up firing their president that day after the statement was released, and then after the season, fired their head coach and basically every coach except their goalie coach, which I kind of saw that move coming. But to fire their president after the statement was made, I think was just very ridiculous and uncalled for. I think it just showed that the Rangers organization was just in all sorts of a mess after this. And it's embarrassing to see, and I didn't think it was the right move, but you got to move on from it now.
Yeah, I mean, this whole situation is just laughable, you know? I mean, this is a guy, like we said, he's known for, you know, being an instigator, right, but doing it in a dirty way, and he just continues to show that he's a scumbag, essentially. You know, he's there to hurt people, and that seems to be his primary motive. I mean, you know, you're a guy that's a lot bigger than, you know, Chynevich, and you're getting on top of him, and you know, you're just punching him in the head for no reason. You know, you're flexing on him in the box like a jackass. You know, you're pulling Panarin down by his hair, hitting his head on the ice. That's not hockey at that point. That's just assault, man. I don't know. Like that's like a street fight. You know, there's a code, you know, in hockey, you know, you fight, but there's an etiquette to it. And he has blatant disregard for all of that. And he's done it before. And it's a joke that the maximum fine is, like we said, $5,000. Meanwhile, the Rangers get fined $250,000 for speaking out against it. And they're speaking out against, like we said, the head of the player safety department. And it's so called for. I mean, whether you're a Rangers fan or not, I mean, how can you witness what Tom Wilson did to multiple players on the Rangers and say that, you know what, that actually is okay. It doesn't violate any player safety, you know, at all. And so for them to sit back and do nothing about it and let Tom Wilson continuously get away with this, it's pathetic. I mean, you know, you got to make an example out of you know, this so that it doesn't happen. And you have to set a precedent, and they didn't. And then they wonder why they're, you know, 100 penalty minutes in the first period against that next game against the Capitals, and the fights immediately break out. I mean, the NHL asked for this. They didn't do anything. So the natural response is the team is going to take it in their own hand. And now they're promoting, you know, vigilante justice, you know, teams settling it instead of like a standardized decision and settlement, punishment, whatever. The NHL set no precedent, and they never do. And it's really, the league office is really a laughingstock in terms of the four major sports. I mean, the NHL is one of the worst run leagues in terms of player safety and in terms of just everything. And it continues to do so. And they want the sport to grow, but they don't allow it to. Just because they just let stuff fly that just shouldn't. I think the firing of you know, the president John Davidson and GM Jeff Gordon was a little sus, you know, right after they released that statement, you know, basically condemning the league office and player safety. It seemed, you know, I read reports that it was, you know, pressure was put on Dolan to get rid of them and whatever, and we may never know. That might be true, and if it is, it's, you know, that's awful, man. I don't know what kind of corruption's going on in there, but you know, they did the right thing. They did what should have been done. They spoke out against, you know, what's going on, and they lost their jobs for it. They became a martyr, but it is what it is. I think I agree with you, Fromm. It's the David Quinn losing his job, I think, has nothing to do with that. I think that was coming. You know, new GM, new regime. That this team has underachieved the past few seasons, despite winning, you know, basically the lottery just about back-to-back years, you know, number one pick, number two pick. Just not getting the most out of guys. I like David Quinn, I do. But I can't disagree with the fact that this team underachieved. And you know, it's time for a fresh start. And they need somebody that's going to get the most out of these guys. So it's exciting in that aspect that, you know, maybe we'll get a change there. But it's definitely a dark time for the NHL and for, you know, the league office and the Rangers. So it's we'll see what happens.
I mean, I will say this. If they were going to replace Jeff Gordon and the president with anyone, I'm glad they did it with Chris Drury. Former captain of the Rangers. He was the general manager for the Wolfpack. They're in Hartford, which Josh and I covered, and Castle, too, covered for our class at University of Hartford. So, you know, and I just like Chris Drury, but I still think they rushed things, and I don't know if that was necessarily the right move. And I know, Jackson, you started to touch upon it. I'm mainly asking you because you're obviously – you like the Knicks, you like the Rangers, you just like the Garden, and obviously the man running the show behind everything and has all the power, James Dolan. Do you think this was really a James Dolan move, or do you think it was outside move, and then obviously James Dolan just had to make the move, or do you think he was like, nope, can't have that? I mean, because I know you're not the biggest fan, well, really no one, especially Knicks and Rangers fans, and are not the biggest fans of Dolan, so I want to just kind of get more of your thoughts on that.
I think the part that confuses me is, for some reason, James Dolan is a competent owner for the Rangers, right? But for the Knicks, he's completely dysfunctional. He meddles. He gets in the way and completely just ruins the Knicks franchise typically. But if for some reason, he stays out of the way of the Rangers. He's very civil. He's very professional. And he lets that team run like a professional team should be run. So for the fact that him to make a Knicks-type decision on the Rangers, to me, was a little suspicious. Especially with the timing of everything, the nature of that action, it didn't seem right to me. I think, you know, this is all speculation, obviously, but I think there was some sort of outside influence, you know, a lot of pressure from maybe the NHL or whomever, for him to make a decision like that, and especially to fire both of them. You know, and he claims that it's because it was time to move on and, you know, he thought Chris Drury was the man. And part of me believes him because he does make rash decisions to just, this is what I want. This is what's happening. We're doing it right now. And so if he got that impulse to just make that decision, then I could see it happening. That's what he does with the Knicks. But like I said, it's a very Knicks-like move for the Rangers, and that's not very common. So it definitely raised an eyebrow for me.
It just pisses, like, us off as fans, like you even more so, because you're a Knick and Ranger fan, and I'm just a Ranger fan. But like you said it perfectly. It's like a Knicks move. Like, this shouldn't have happened. They spoke out against the safety of their organization because they care about player safety, and to get fired and say it had nothing to do with it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it really, and just kind of to what you both said, it reflects on the league office and the higher up people and working for the NHL. And if change is not happening from this, then how's there ever going to be any other change for, and who knows if there'll be worse things that happen that they won't change. So it definitely starts from up there, and it's unfortunate that people who are speaking about and caring about their players for something that was dangerous and not uncalled for and not, you know, Jackson, I think you said it wasn't hockey. It was pretty much assault. So the league is not doing anything about that. Then that's just scary for the league in the future, not just for the Rangers, but for any of the players, teams, coaches, general managers. I mean, this happens. I mean, what if this were to happen to a guy like Connor McDavid, the face of NHL right now? Because, I mean, Sidney Crosby is no longer the face. It's Connor McDavid. So if Tom, you know, it doesn't have to be Tom Wilson, but if McDavid got assaulted like this, obviously the Oilers are going to be really mad and they're going to speak out, coaches, players, front office. Is the league going to be down the Oilers' throat saying, you know, you can't speak out against this? Will they fire their guys? I don't know, because it's Connor McDavid, and they're probably want to do everything in their power to keep him happy and keep him safe, because he's their boy. He's, I think Connor McDavid is a face of the NHL right now, so maybe I'm wrong there, but I mean, the dude just scored 100 points in what, 50 something games? So that's pretty, that's crazy to think about. So I'm saying, like, I wonder if, the Rangers are a marquee franchise. So I just don't get, like, if this is going to be like this for every team, for every player or not. But the NHL has got a lot to change, a lot to think about. And it really starts off with people at the top. And if they can't change, then the league's in for some dark times and maybe in for doom. But that's it. So pretty much we covered a lot today. And first things first, Jackson, thanks again for coming on, taking Castle's spot. You know, it was a pretty fun episode to obviously talk some football, your Knicks, your Rangers. So thanks again for hopping on with us.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me on, and look forward to, you know, participating again at some point.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, we'll bring you on as a guest, even with Castle, so we can talk more of all this lovely stuff. And hopefully, you know, who knows, maybe the Knicks, if they're making a deep run, we'll definitely have to bring you on. And then also, too, just a quick few shout-outs to Kevin from Wild Chat Sports. Kevin, you're doing a phenomenal job with that, and thank you so much for letting us be partners with you. And then I just wanted to give personal shout-outs to our co-hosts Josh and Alex, and then our social media guy, Matt Engler. They're all graduating this weekend from University of Hartford. So, boys, congratulations. Your hard work paid off. It was a pleasure, you know, meeting you guys. And, I mean, if we didn't all connect through this, you know, who knows if 3P would be a thing, but congratulations. You know, your hard work paid off. Big, you know, this is a big moment for you guys. So congrats and good luck with your future. The 3P's still going on, though. Just because they're graduating doesn't mean this is the end. We're still going. We're only beginning. So, and then, you know, again, Matt Engler, thanks again for just all the work for your social media that you do for our Instagram page at the handle at 3P Podcast. So make sure to keep following that. And then just keep listening and, because we're loving just cranking them out. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.